All right, so picture this. You've got a property line dispute between neighbors. Pretty run-of-the-mill, right? But what if I told you that one neighbor, and get this, they knew they were on the other person's land, used it for like almost 20 years, and then the court decided they get to keep it.
You're talking about Walling v. Prezzy Bylaw, right? Yeah, that case is a perfect example of this kind of a tricky thing in property law, adverse possession. It sounds crazy, like how could that even be legal? But it comes down to this balance between rights and responsibilities when we're talking about who owns land, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And this thing went all the way up to the New York Court of Appeals. Pretty high stakes. So we're talking two lots in Queensbury, New York. The Wallings on one, the Prezzy Bylaws on the other. Wallings bought theirs back in 86, the Prezzy Bylaws a bit later. But here's where it gets wild. The Wallings were using a chunk of the Prezzy Bylaws' land, like back in 86, before the Prezzy Bylaws even lived there.
And they weren't exactly subtle about it either. Bulldozing, planting grass, even built a whole shed. Like they treated it as their own for what, almost 2 decades?
See, now I'm confused. How do they get away with that? Especially knowing it wasn't theirs. That's like an open and shut case for the Prezzy Bylaws, isn't it?
You'd think so, right? But that's where it gets interesting, all the ins and outs of adverse possession. There are 5 things you got to prove in New York to make that claim.
Five things. Okay, break it down for me. What's number one?
So the first one is hostile and under claim of right. Now, hostile, we're not talking like fist fights at the barbecue or anything. In this case, it just means they were using the land without permission.
So even though the Wallings knew in their heads that land wasn't theirs, it was still hostile because they got acted like it was.
Right. And that's where the claim of right part comes in. They weren't just like accidentally stepping over the line, you know? They were going all in, using it, making it nicer, treating it like they owned it. Actions speak louder than words and all that.
So it's like they were screaming, "This is mine," with every time they mowed the lawn or hammered a nail into that shed.
Exactly. And this is where it gets good. Element number two is actual, open, notorious, exclusive, and continuous use. It's a mouthful, I know, but basically, was it super obvious they were treating the land as their own?
So they weren't exactly hiding out, were they?
Not even a little. Out in the open, using it constantly for 20 years, nobody else involved. Obvious. And that's key because the court really zeroed in on that when making their decision.
Wait, so the Prezzy Bylaws never noticed? Did they just never like walk around their property?
Well, that seems to be the big question here. The court was saying it's not just what the trespasser knows, but how they act, and this is important if the real owner does anything about it. They even said, quote, "The ultimate element is the true owner's acquiescence." Strong words.
Hold up. Acquiescence, is that like fancy lawyer speak for?
Yeah, basically it means the Prezzy Bylaws, they were the real owners, but they kind of went along with it, didn't stop it, even if they didn't realize exactly what was going on. Almost like the law is saying, if you're not going to guard your own property, someone else might just come along and claim it.
Wow, so even though technically the Wallings knew they were in the wrong doing it that way for so long, and the Prezzy Bylaws, well, not doing anything, that's what flipped it in their favor.
You got it. And it wasn't an easy win either. This went back and forth through the courts, started in the trial court, then up to the appellate division, and finally, the big leagues, the Court of Appeals.
Okay, so take me through this legal roller coaster. What happened first?
First, the trial court said, yep, Wallings win, no need for a full trial. Simple, right. But then, get this, on a motion to renew, which basically means, hey, court, think again, the trial court changed their mind.
Why'd they do that?
All because of what the Wallings knew. Did they know right from the start that it wasn't their land? It was enough to make the court hesitate, like, hold on, we need more info here.
So it was a bit more complicated than it looked at first. What happened next?
Up it goes to the appellate division, and they're back on the Walling side, saying that, yeah, they used the land consistently for all those years. Their actions mattered more than whatever they knew about the actual property line.
So that's two courts for the Wallings, one for the Prezzy Bylaws. Getting intense. But it didn't end there, did it?
Oh no, it kept going. Final stop, the New York Court of Appeals, highest court in the state. They backed up what the appellate division said, so now it's official. The Wallings get the disputed land.
Wow, what a turn of events. After all that, the Wallings end up with land they knew wasn't theirs to begin with. This brings up a lot of questions about, like, is this even fair? And what about responsibility? We'll be back in a sec to dive into what all this means for you.
Really makes you stop and think, huh? Like, at first glance, it just feels like the Prezzy Bylaws got a bad deal, you know? They bought their land legally, it's right there in their deed, and boom, they lose part of it to someone who knew it wasn't even theirs.
I know, right? It almost seems like, are we rewarding the Wallings for, like, knowingly taking something that didn't belong to them? I'm having trouble wrapping my head around how that's justice.
I totally get where you're coming from, but if we step back a bit, look at the big picture, adverse possession, it starts to make more sense, maybe. It's not about saying, hey, squatters, good job. It's more about pushing for responsible land ownership. You know, it's a way to clear up these boundary disputes that could go on forever.
But less about like punishing the Prisbalilos, more about making sure land is actually being used, sort of a don't let it go to waste kind of thing.
Exactly. The law is basically saying, hey, if you're not using your land, protecting it, and someone else is like openly treating it as their own for a good chunk of time, well, maybe the law should catch up to that.
Okay, that makes a little more sense. So it's a bit of a wake-up call for anyone who owns property, right? Like,
Yeah.
know where your lines are, keep an eye on things, deal with any problems right away.
Absolutely. If you don't, you might find yourself in the Prisbalilo situation losing some of your land, even though legally you have the paperwork to say it's yours.
This whole case just shows how law can be so, I don't know, unpredictable sometimes.
Yeah.
Even like counterintuitive. You think you know who's right, who's wrong, then the courts go and throw you a curveball.
Definitely highlights how complex this whole property rights thing can be. Makes you realize you gotta get good legal advice when these disputes pop up. What's really sticking out to you about this case?
You know, what gets me is how the fact that the Wallings knew played out in court. At first, I thought, well, that's it, game over. But then the higher courts, it's like they didn't even care that much about what the Wallings knew. They focused more on their actions and what the Prisbalilos didn't do.
That's a really good point. Shows how in these adverse possession cases, the court, they care less about what's going on in someone's mind, more about what's actually happening on the land. Wallings acted like they owned it. Prisbalilos, for whatever reason, let it slide for 20 years.
Makes me wonder, are there ever times when, like, if the trespasser knows, if that would matter to the court? Imagine the Wallings had flat out said, yeah, we knew it wasn't ours. Would that have changed anything?
Great question. It didn't disqualify them this time, but yeah, there are totally situations where that knowledge could make a difference. Like, let's say the Wallings had casually asked the Prisbalilos, hey, mind if we use this bit? Even without a formal agreement, that acknowledgement, that could have weakened their whole hostile use argument.
So just a casual chat about the property line could have flipped this entire case. That's wild.
For sure. It's all about the specifics, how everyone acted, the whole context. No two cases are exactly alike.
Let's talk takeaways for our listeners. What's the big lesson from Walling v. Prisbalilos? What do they need to know to protect themselves?
If you remember nothing else, remember this. Be proactive about your property. Know your boundaries, what's happening on your land. Don't just let things slide. Don't wait 20 years to deal with someone maybe encroaching, or you might lose a chunk of your property.
So, like, if you're not paying attention, your neighbor could end up owning your prize-winning roses. Good reminder to stay on top of things.
Exactly. And look, if you're ever not sure about a boundary or someone might be encroaching, talk to a legal pro. They can guide you through all that.
Solid advice. This whole case has been a fascinating look at adverse possession. Really eye-opening. It's crazy how something that seems like a simple property fight can uncover these huge legal principles. But before we wrap up, there's one thing the court said that's bugging me. They talked about the true owner's acquiescence. What does that even mean, like practically? How much not doing anything is enough for the court to side against you?
You've hit on a key point, and the tricky part is there's no easy answer. Every case has its own quirks. But generally, the court is looking for a pattern, you know, something that shows the owner wasn't bothered by or maybe even aware of the property line situation.
So let's say the Prisbalilos had gone over to that shed, like once a year, and said to the Wallings, just so you know, this is actually on our side. Would that have been enough to show they weren't okay with it, that the Wallings weren't using it continuously?
Very possibly. Even something small like that, it could show that the owner knew what was up. They weren't just ignoring it. Shows they were paying attention, even if they didn't go all out with legal action.
So a quick chat could have changed the whole outcome. That's incredible how much power the courts give to, like, what people do or don't do.
It really does emphasize how important communication is and being proactive about those property boundaries. A little conversation can sometimes prevent a huge legal mess later on.
This has been a total deep dive into adverse possession. I've learned so much. But before we send our listeners off to go measure their yards, one last question for you. This whole case really makes you think, like, does this adverse possession thing actually lead to, you know, a just outcome? On one hand, you've got the Wallings, they got to use land they knew wasn't theirs. benefited from it. But then there's the Prezibilos. They seem totally clueless about what was going on right on their own property.
Yeah.
It feels like somebody had to get the short end of the stick here.
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher trying to balance, like, encouraging people to use land well and also protecting the people who legally own it. Sometimes those two things, they clash.
Right, so how do we decide what's okay and what's not? Is it fair to, like, punish someone for not knowing about this encroachment thing, especially when we're talking about something as big as, you know, owning land?
Yep.
That's where it gets super tricky. Adverse possession, the whole idea behind it is that owning land shouldn't be this passive thing, you know. If it's yours, you've got to know your boundaries, and you've got to do something if somebody's stepping on your toes, property-wise.
So it's like, it's not enough to just have the deed. You got to be actively involved with your property.
Exactly. You got to be present, see what's happening, and make sure people respect your boundaries. If you're not doing that, you could lose those rights to someone who's using the land. Might seem harsh, but the idea is to prevent land from just sitting there unused when someone else could be making the most of it.
Sounds like a use it or lose it policy for property owners.
Yeah.
You snooze, you lose, kind of.
You got it. And it reminds us that property rights, as important as they are, they're not unlimited, right? They exist within this whole system of laws and expectations that try to balance individual rights with what's best for society as a whole.
This case really flips the script on that whole finders keepers thing. It's more like users keepers, even if the user knew they were pushing the limits.
Definitely makes you rethink things, raises questions about what's fair, what it means to be a responsible property owner. In the end, this Walling v. Prezibilo case, it reminds us that property law, it's not always simple, and it can definitely throw you some curveballs. We got to be aware of our rights, our responsibilities, and not be afraid to stand up for them.
This has been a truly fascinating deep dive into adverse possession. I mean, who knew a seemingly straightforward property dispute could be so complex and challenge how we think about what it means to own something, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the one key takeaway you want our listeners to remember?
If you only take away one thing from our conversation, it's this. Know your property lines, be on the lookout, don't wait to assert your rights as a property owner. And if you're ever unsure about something, talk to a legal professional. They can help you navigate all the twists and turns of property law.
That's excellent advice. Thanks for joining us on this journey exploring adverse possession. Until next time, folks, keep those property lines clear and stay curious.